I will force those who oppress you to eat their own flesh, and they will get drunk on their own blood as though it were sweet wine. All will know that I, Jehovah, am your Savior, your Reclaimer, the Mighty One of Jacob. Isaiah 49, verse 26, the last verse of that chapter in Isaiah. Let's look ahead. See what we have here. We've got Isaiah 66 coming up. Jehovah willing, tomorrow, but that verse was today's daily scripture. Isaiah 49 and 26 from the Word Green version of 2003, Little Children. And I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. Anyone who speaks against a world ruler, the leader of a country, is going to be disciplined by the Most High God, because the leaders of countries are appointed by that Most High God. He knows about the attitudes of people who are arrogant and who think that they're superior, and he will humble those people. He does humble those people. Right? For their arrogance, he who exalts himself will be humbled, Christ said. And he who humbles himself will be exalted. In the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, chapter 6, paragraph 8 now. Yeah, we saw some interesting things yesterday that proved. We saw proof. And by the way, I found an article, which I want to show you. It's absolutely a great article. It's by a Russian scientist. I think it's a Russian scientist. But just a minute here. Sorry about that. I clicked on a different app here. Let me get this wide enough that we can do this. Let's get it large enough that we can see it. There we go. So, going to the beginning of this article, in Russia, Moscow State University is mentioned there, so it's a Russian, it looks like. The article's written by someone in Russia, and it's a great reference for us, because I was thinking to myself, where do I know that we can find the... I just thought of this yesterday, and I found this yesterday. Where can we find, I thought to myself, the Arcus Visioni for the different planets, right? So if you look down in this article, the Arcus Visionis, which is the angle between the visible orbs of the sun and some other thing, at which that other thing becomes visible, because the sun, the light from the sun obliterates it when it's too close. So what's the Arcus Visionis would be the minimum distance at which it becomes visible. And there's a table in this article. We have to go down, scroll all the way down to the table. It's not very far, but yeah, it's quite far. There it is. Venus, Jupiter, Mercury, Saturn, and Mars. It gives Ptolemy's, they spelled Ptolemy differently here from the way we spell Ptolemy. Ptolemy. So we spell Ptolemy. But maybe that's the Russian way of spelling it. But Ptolemy, Shock, and their model calculation are shown here. And here we have Venus is 6 in their model, the Arcus Visionis. So it's 5 or 6 degrees Arcus Visionis for Venus. And Jupiter's given, but we're not concerned about that. Mercury, to be visible, has to be 10 or 9 or 10 degrees away from the sun. So and he gives the altitude also above the horizon, which is a different thing. But if you read the article, I think you'll find the same as I did, that if I understand it correctly anyway, what I understand is that the sun is assumed to be below the horizon at the time of the visibility, so that the altitude of the object above the horizon is, for Venus, is 2.5 degrees, but that assumes that the sun is then 3.5 degrees below the horizon at the same time, so the total arcus visionis, or it's the arcus visionis, it's not just how much below the horizon, but the arcus visionis is 6, and so part of that could be the azimuth. I think he even gives a beautiful little drawing here of what the azimuth is, which we never see. Nobody ever shows us that drawing that indicates what the azimuth is. So if I'm not mistaken, this article also gives us that. We got to look for it. I think it's near the beginning. I'm surprised I didn't see it. Maybe it's not in here. Maybe it was somewhere else. There it is it? Yeah, it's right there. So you see, he shows the arcus visionis is called gamma. No, okay, so it is an altitude difference in degrees. Okay, I never understood that before. I thought that it was a direct number of degrees along the diagonal between the sun and the star or object, like a planet. The star could be a planet or a star or some other visible object in the sky, but the arcus visionis is gamma, as shown there, right? And we talked about before, the letter W is actually a letter that you could call di gamma, double gamma. Fascinating, because in Greek, it's alpha, beta, gamma means gamma is also equivalent to this letter C. So it's like a double C, and if you go from Russian, the C in Russian is an S, so it's like a double S if you look at the W that way, which is completely unusual to think of that, because you can get different ideas from that. But the star is an altitude above the horizon of H, and the sun below the horizon of small or lowercase h. And it's the sum of those two angles that gives the arcus visionis. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful article, because it gives us all that information. And when we looked at our study yesterday, we had this study, right? Right, is this the one? Yeah, in this case, we're showing the sun on the horizon, right? And so, and the sun is just rising because it's the eastern horizon, and Mercury is below the planet Venus there. And I would be, now the distance between the sun and Venus would need to be about 6 degrees, and I think it is. In this drawing about that, in this simulation, the simulation of SkyChart 3, running, back then I was running it in VirtualBox, actually, when I could run it that way, and now, since I'm running on Apple Silicon, I haven't yet been able to run that simulation at a very efficient clock speed, or whatever you want, you know, the pace at which it runs is relatively slow, because what have we got here? Let's just, way too much brightness here. The program's running very slow because UTM has to emulate a Windows system, which is much slower than, let's see what we can do here, much slower than what it was running when I had an Intel processor before. it could run. It wouldn't have to emulate the Intel processor, so it was much faster. So these photos or these captures were taken when I had a faster computer, but a faster way of running this simulation. But I could still run it. It's just a lot less convenient now. Also, I can't show you the actual live program the way it is here, because back then I did a capture like that, and then I showed it. Whereas now I have to flip the sky color because I'm doing my videos in inverted colors, and it just means that I can't show the planets, just the names of the planets. Now I can't show the planets themselves when I do the simulation. We saw that yesterday. You can still see, and you can guess where they are, because they're always to the left and below the planet name. So you can know where they are, but you don't see them, right? But we know exactly where they are based on this. They're just to the left and just below the left-hand end of the name of the planet, or the sun, depending. Now, Mercury would not be visible because its Arcus Visionis was larger than that of Venus, and I think Venus is very close to the Arcus of Visionis in this illustration, but I don't think that's 12 degrees there for Mercury. But, we'll have to check that. At some point, we will check it. You know, it's just that it's good if you can do more than one thing at once and not be chasing all the time one single thought. So here we go. 1330 hours, I know, that was longer than a fire break, and actually it was time to get a haircut. I cut my own, so I squeezed it in as well. A funny thing, but shaving a haircut, 10 cents, might be actually true these days when you do it yourself by the price of everything these days. It's rather odd, isn't it? For some reason, I started thinking about John Daly against Costantino Rocca at St. Andrews in 1995 when they had the playoff announced and said, "We have had a tie." Anyway, the fire didn't want to start, so it took a while. But it's now on the third log, so it should be good a while. To use the Almagest ephemeris calculator, you enter the date at the top of the calendar module. Yeah, this is how you do it, but we no longer have to do that because we use our LEAP calculator on the Will of Jehovah homepage. You enter the date at the top of the calendar module of the Almagest Ephemeris calculator, and then click on the button at the bottom called Update Ephemeris. Among the months at the top, you have the month Hathor, the third month, which I guess is the same as the month Ather. And in fact, it is. Just the H at the beginning is the only difference. Since Semiramis was said to live in 747 BCE, as Nabonassar was becoming king of Babylon, our date of 2747 BCE is 2,000 years before Nabonassar, or Hathor 17, minus 2,000 era Nabonassar. It's another way of looking at it. For the date we're talking about, which is the death of Osiris, right? Or, as we're also intimating here, the death of Nimrod. But why was... Okay, but now Nimrod couldn't have been the same person who was killed by Haik, the Armenian, with a longbow from a long distance, a long shot, and still be the same person who was put in a box by his brother Thoth, could he? I mean, that seems like a bit of a contradiction. And then put in a box, that is, and set out to sea, is the legend about how Osiris died. So maybe Osiris is not the same person as Nimrod. Maybe. I mean, we don't actually know everything. We're making a lot of conjectures, but also it may be that the legend about Haik might be explaining something else about his long shot, or the legend about Thoth might be talking about Noah and the ark, right? And that might be conflated with the Hathor 17 date, which occurred in 2747 BCE, as we've seen. That's the correct year for that, because Venus and Mercury are so close to the sun there. It's remarkable. Truly remarkable. Is it not? It's just astounding how we've seemingly proven something that's that ancient to be an accurate date. It's just, and I mean, it's the best that we've ever seen. Now, maybe someone will find something even better, but just like Jesus warned people, you know, there will be many who come and impersonate me, you know, and try to mislead people. Well, we don't want to be unaware that there could be people who try to claim they found a better thing than what we found. That could happen, so we need to be aware of that. And it agrees with the statement by Herennius Philo, that is, this date of 2747. It agrees with the statement by Herennius Philo, confirmed from research, that Nimrod is 2,000 years before Semiramis. 1,400 hours. It also agrees with 27 years after the eclipse of Nimrod. And since I found this to be a coincidence, I looked up the source for the 17th of Athor, that is Plutarch, writing in the work of Plutarch called, quote, On Isis and Osiris, end quote. It was written by Plutarch somewhere between 46 CE and 120 CE. I guess that's the time of Plutarch's life. But that's roughly when it was written. And they say also that the date on which, this is the quote from Plutarch, they say also that the date on which this deed was done was the 17th day of Athor, when the sun passes through Scorpion, and in the 28th year of the reign of Osiris. But some say that these are the years of his life, and not of his reign. Right. So if they're the years of his life, then it wouldn't give us any way of calculating what date it was, unless we had his birth date also, right? Fifteen hours. The proposed date was Wednesday, September 25th, 2747 BCE. In dates of such antiquity, the Julian calendar is the one most often used. Right, that's true. As it is also used for this case. But that's because, you know, the Gregorian calendar had not been invented until 1582, wasn't it? 1582 or was it 1580? I'm trying to think. 1580 or 82? Why don't I know that date? Let's find out. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's 1582. But they're saying it was instituted in February 24 of that year, 1582, but it didn't come into effect until October, I believe, of that year, right? It was between October 5th and The 10 days were added to make it October 15. Let's write that. Let's search that. All right, search for the 15th, October. It went into effect in October 1582, right? October 4th became, it was followed by October 15th instead of October 5th, so they added 10 days in that year, 1582. That's the story of the Gregorian calendar. So that wasn't instituted till such a late time that when doing ancient dates, we use the Julian, which was instituted something like more than 1,500 years prior, right? During the time of Julius Caesar, we use the Julian calendar. So that's where we get our... So that affects things, you know, the Julian dates differ from the Gregorian at this time, 27 BC. That's a difference of several weeks or so, I think you could say. Or what was it, October? I'm trying to remember what the difference is. But it's really not important right now. I mean, everything can be done. We've got the Almagest calculator here. Does it still link to that? Maybe not. It used to. It does. The link is not broken. We've got a faithful web page. Excellent. So that's linked. You can go to that if you want to and investigate and, you know, use the Almagest calculator if you want to. Looks like, anyway, from that. I don't use it anymore because we've got the LEAP application, which we're going to show you right now, I think, to show you this example here. When we do this, right, let's just scroll aside here to the... If we go in here to minus and then enter backspacing 2747 and get the month right, we can go back in months this way, September, right? We want to get to Hathor 17, which is right there, Hathor 17, it's September, well, let's get the Egyptian time zone first, it's September 25th, okay, and if we go Gregorian, I don't know what that is in Gregorian, what is it, we don't do the Gregorian. I don't have a facility for switching. That would be too complex, right? Way too complex to have both calendars in this calculator, because then there could be confusion. Nobody uses the Gregorian, or virtually nobody in science uses the Gregorian calendar for this ancient time period ever. And essentially not before 1582. They just don't use the Gregorian calendar, although there are people who do. They're just in the minority. I think a very small minority. But they do exist, so you have to be aware of it. So you have to be aware that they might be using the Gregorian if they're not letting you know. And that could change by many days, actually, but several days at least, what the date is. I think, we saw it was sometime in October something, right? October 10th, or I forget. Exact date, the Gregorian date for this, October something, and you can find that out by looking at the SkyChart 3 program in Windows, if you have the ability to download that. The demo, SkyChart 3 demo, it does everything you need in the demo, and if you can get SkyChart 3, because the problem with the new SkyChart 4 is I found an issue with it when you advance the months incrementally, it loses the position of the sun, the accurate positioning, and it sometimes can't center on the sun correctly or even at all. It's got some glitches that they need to iron out, and I even on the most recent version of the SkyChart 4 program, it just doesn't work. Carte du ciel is the French name for that. But it just doesn't, unfortunately, doesn't work as well as the SkyChart 3 does. The SkyChart 3 is perfect, as far as I can tell. Absolutely perfect. So it's just that SkyChart 3, if you're running it in UTM under Mac OS, yeah, it can crash sometimes, or it has on some occasions, actually, but it didn't recently, though, the last several times I've used it, but knowing that it can crash is a big, you know, detriment. What are we like? 25 minutes. Okay. So, yeah. Well, I had a wonderful expedition today. I counted the number of steps it takes me to walk to the post office. It's something like 1,600 steps, which is, you know, probably a little more than a kilometer, which I think is about right. I think it's about a mile to get to the grocery store, which is a little further up the road from the post office. So, but not much further, but it's still a substantial distance further. But so I think a mile is maybe pretty accurate for the distance from my house to the shopping center. It's a good walk. I didn't time the walk. I should have timed it, because that would give me more information to calculate the distance also. I think I walk at about 4 miles per hour. I think I can walk a mile in 15 minutes. And or maybe slightly slower than that is how I walk. Until, you know, but that's how I used to walk at my peak of, you know, physical fitness, which I may get back to, actually. I may be able to get back to the same level of physical fitness that I had, where I can walk, you know, at the maximum speed. But I think it always is good to warm up first, too. So I walk slower while I'm warming up, because I don't want to pull a muscle or, you know, do anything. I wore my running shoes today, and they're much, much better. My ASICS running shoes are like Olympic quality running shoes. They're just amazing. I paid a few hundred bucks, I think. What was it? I paid more than 100, but less than 200, I think I paid for those, because I got a good deal on them from Sport Check or some company. And, you know, they're just so much better for walking. I'll never wear my hiking boots again, and I'll try the other hiking boots, my Danners, and see how those are. But I think they're better than the Merrells. I just don't. Well, maybe the Merrells need to break in more. I just don't think they're broken in, or they don't flex well enough. The running shoes, though, you don't have to break them in. They're phenomenal. They just are incredible. So walking today was blissful, you know, as far as that goes. And I went today and got my Barry King center shader, which is a leather working tool. It's a very nice tool for shading the centers of flowers when you're tooling the representation of a flower into leather. And I have yet to even do any leather work as far as doing any figure work, you know, leather working and putting an illustration into the leather. It's called Western work if you put flowers into a leather object, like a leather belt or something. It's called Western work for some reason. I think that's because the Western style belts have had that kind of tooling in some cases, right? So, but you can do all sorts of leather working. The flowers are the most beautiful, I think, because they have more elements in them that you can easily recognize when you see it. And it's, but I mean, you can do any kind of vegetation, or you can do rope work, basket work, like basket weave, rope impressions. And what was the other one I saw recently? I'm trying to think. Well, there are different kinds of basket weaving patterns that you can get. And some of them are startlingly good. You can do all sorts of things like snake scales, like any kind of, they have what's called dragon scales. They have all sorts of things. You can carve into the leather. You stamp it in with a hammer and a leather stamp. That's how you do all this. And you cut with a leather knife as well. So we were talking about these watches yesterday, right? I always run out of time. But, yeah, the Miyota movement is a Japanese movement. It's automatic, so the watch winds itself. Both of these are Miyota movements. They're the same exact model, except that one of them is more recent than the other. So one of them does hacking, which is the Iron Annie, does hacking made by Bauhaus, the casing of the watches, but the Miyota movement does hacking. And so that means when you pull out the crown to set the watch, the second hand stops, and that means you can set it to the exact second by starting it again right on time with the second hand of your, you know, standard watch, or your you know, what do you call those actual, there's a name, the timekeeping watches anyway, whatever they are, the clocks, the timekeeping clocks that are, like nowadays, all computers are exact. They're, because they're always kept in time with those timekeeping clocks. Nuclear clocks and, you know, very accurate clocks are what are doing the timekeeping. So we don't have any problem. We can use our computer always, as long as it's connected to the internet, we can use it as a standard. At least I know that's true in Mac OS, and I assume it's true in Windows. I assume it's always true in Android, in iOS, all those things. So knowing that, I can measure how fast or slow my automatic watch is. It winds itself based on the movement of my wrist, right? It just winds itself all the time. So I never have to wind the watch as long as I wear it virtually all day, although I could probably take it off at night and it would still keep itself wound up well enough. But the Miyota movement, like I said, is based on and is sort of an homage to the Rolex Day Date 40. And the characteristic thing and beautiful thing about the Day Date 40 is it gives the day of the month at 3 o'clock, and at the very top at 12 o'clock, it gives the day of the week in full spelling. It spells the whole name. That's a fantastic idea that Rolex had for the day-date watch. That's it for today. It's November 9th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 13:46 North American Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching, and I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Annie, saying bye for now. I'm so used to saying, this is Liv Dusty, and Liv Dusty is in my winding box, so she's kept wound, in case I want to use her. Bye for now.